So, okay, first of all, I hope to have another class on Friday, even though it's past the formal end of the semester, at 11 a.m., the usual time, and Shabo Scharveling, who is one of the Dutch people who is following us by video, is going to talk via Skype on SL3 at k equals zero. And I don't know exactly what he wants to say, but it will be lovely to hear him. I'm definitely going to be here and listen, okay?
K is the power of epsilon to the k plus one is equal to zero.
So epsilon equals to zero. Not theoretically, it's not going to be interesting because for abstract reasons, I know it's going to give the Alexander polynomial back again.
Oh, okay.
However, it would be the first step, or a first step, towards higher k's, which would be interesting. So again, you know, not theoretically it's not interesting, but algebraically it is. Okay. So, you know, just to summarize the class, this is the last formal meeting of the class. We covered about two-thirds of what I was hoping to cover. And even worse is we failed with the research part, or I failed. Though we did do, I mean, some progress was made, but not the progress I was hoping to make. Well, what can I say? I'm sorry. I failed to estimate how hard the things are, or I maybe overestimated how much progress I would be able to make in real time. So, sorry again. Anyway, the worst omission, the absolute worst omission, which I plan to fix today, is the fact that we didn't discuss how the gentle part of class connects with the brute part of class. And it's not just connects, it was the motivation, it's how the brute came to be. But we didn't even mention how they connect. So they connect via the diagram on the blackboard, which I wrote very, very, very tightly, so it's even hard to tell that it's a commutative diagram, because I made the arrow too short, because the proportions are a bit bad. But you can see that it's more or less agreed, right? And before we go into it, let me say that this diagram is to some extent schematic. So there is abundant small print, okay? There is lots and lots of things where ifs and buts and not exactly, and this is sort of a simplified version, okay? Now, to talk about brute and gentle. So gentle is the stuff in yellow. We talked about knots, or what I would call usual knots. And again, the small print is that it's really tangles, and in fact, not quite that. You'll see in a minute. And then the associated graded, which is a certain space of core diagrams. And then there would be an expansion between them, and I kind of explain what it is, and I semi-explained how to construct it. I will say again later. Okay, so that was yellow. That was gentle, and then brute was given a knot. We directly by kind of roundabout ways, complicated ways, constructed invariants into universal enveloping algebras of various algebras that I will get to when I when I get to this part of the diagram. So there was a k is equal to 0 and a k greater than 0 version, and part of it is constructed, part of it is not constructed. Again, I'll say later. And then the relation between the two, and again, I'm at most hoping to convince you that there ought to be a relation, okay? So the relation between the two is basically the rest of the diagram. You snake through this diagram to get the relation, okay? But and it looks like a lot, because if you look at the proportion of what is yellow and what is blue as to what is white, which is still to be done, then it looks discouraging, okay? But it's not that bad, because, okay, the first column here is always not theoretic, so it's various spaces of knots and knot-like objects, and we talked about one of them, but then there are others. The column in the middle is always the associated graded. So to go from left to middle, you always take the associated graded. So it's a repeating pattern. We've done one, and then the rest are similar. And then the column here is always universal enveloping algebras, or of various types of Lie algebras and related gadgets. And then there is also a pattern how to go from here to here. You have to choose a Lie algebra and then do something. So really the most important thing that I have to tell you about is about this. Once I tell you about this, the rest is of a similar pattern. And then we can talk about the rest of the diagram. It will not be very convincing, but it will be quick. Okay? It will not be very convincing because all of these objects need time to get used to. Okay? So, most important thing is this, which I haven't told you about yet. Okay? Okay. But let me first remind you what... Basically, let me first reconstruct the diagram systematically, in order, okay? So, first of all, KU, so what I mean by KU is, well, let me, sorry, it's going to be systematic, but also a bit loose, okay? So, one way to say it, so we spoke about it as the space of tangles, but one way to say it is to say that it's the metamonoid generated by crossings and modulo Rademeister 2 and 3, and you know, maybe also 1, it's a matter of taste, okay? And that's a lag, and that's why I left space here. Okay? So, what do I mean by that? So, well, basically, you start with crossings, and to say that it's a metamonoid means that you're allowing yourself to stitch strands, and once you do that, you get arbitrary tangles. Now, why is this a lie? Because not all stitchings are allowed. So it's not really a metamonoid, but it's more a planar metamonoid. And come to think of it, I should have introduced this structure at some point. It should have been a structure that we talk about. So what's a planar metamonoid? So we talked about it, but we never made it into an official structure, okay? So a planar metamonoid would be, so the objects, instead of just being, dependent on a list of strands, they should depend also on a word which involves the elements of x with plus minus powers, so x or maybe with subscripts in, out, x in, y out, and so on. So basically the cyclic ordering by which you meet, or in fact even the linear ordering by which you meet the endpoints of the strands if you go at the bottom of the of the tangle. Okay? So and the operations, instead of being arbitrary stitching operations, they would be, you're only allowed to stitch things if they're neighboring, and if the out of one neighbors the in of the other. Okay? So you know, I didn't make it into a formal definition, but I think it's clear enough what I mean by that. And even that is a lie. So let me leave more space here to add another modifier, adjective, okay? But no, it's adjective or adjective. So planar, yeah, adjective.
It modifies a noun, so it's...
Ah, yeah, so okay. So let me leave another space here, but we'll see it later. I mean, okay, we'll see. Okay, so this is that space, okay? That space, AU, let me remind you what it is. So AU is, again, the metamonoid defined by, the thing that replaces the crossing is the chord. So the basic generator is a chord. And you know, even here I should have said it's a crossing between strand A and B. So and so here I should also be saying a chord going between strands A and B. And the thing that replaces the Rademeister moves is the 4T relation, which we wrote several times, so I will not write it again. Now, to be perfectly fair, again, I should add the same modifiers, the same adjectives. Basically because if I want AU to be the associated graded of that, then it should have the same collection of spaces, okay? And so you know, so if the spaces, instead of just depending on S, they also depend on a word, then these spaces should also depend on a word. Except over here, it actually doesn't matter what the word is. The spaces are canonically isomorphic to each other. It just the objects here are combinatorial, so it just doesn't matter how you organize, how you order the endpoints. So, you know, I could put the modifiers here, I could put it, and I could put the next modifier as well, but it's not truly necessary, at least at this level. When you start talking about Grothendieck-Thachmuller groups, which you may have heard of in Berkeley, then it becomes necessary. But at this level it is. But when you're only talking about expansions, you can just ignore the extra complexity. Okay. I'm still reviewing actually what we did last time. So this, or last, you know, long ago, at various older time. So this space, one way to view it, and this is as it is stated here, so basically you look at chord diagrams, so I will use vertical for the strand, so these are elements of S, and then in between there are chords connected whichever way you want, okay? And you mod out by the 4T relation. So let me remind you what the 4T relation was. It said that if you have a chord and another chord where you sum over the two ways of connecting it below the stationary one, then it's the same as commuting it to the other order. So it's the same as that. That was the 4T relation. Okay? But then I also said that this is isomorphic to another space of diagrams where you again have, so you know, maybe now, well, okay, I'm barely leaving myself enough space, but it's isomorphic to another space of chord diagrams where you are allowing internal trivalent vertices. You are allowing, in fact, complicated structures made of these internal trivalent vertices. You are also are allowing, no, I said R twice. You are also allowing chords just as before. And again, this picture is almost planar. I didn't really mean it. I mean, like, the chords could go, I mean, it's a combinatorial picture. But now you mod out by a different collection of relations. And the collection, the relations are anti-symmetry, which says that, okay, so part of the small print would be that the vertices here are oriented, meaning you have a cyclic ordering. So basically, anti-symmetry says that this cyclic ordering plus the opposite cyclic ordering is equal to zero if it is within a single sort of, basically, if this is the only modification you make to a diagram, you reverse the orientation of one vertex, then you negate the diagram. A more interesting relation is the STU relation, which says that if you have a skeleton edge and a Y lying on top of it, sorry, I said lying, so it's actually horizontal, okay? Then this is equal to this minus that. And finally, the most interesting relation, the IHX relation, which says, why is it the most interesting? I don't know, because it's fun. Basically, it says that if you have an I shape made of internal pieces, then you can replace it by an H shape minus an X shape, where, the isomorphism was, so the map from here to here was obvious. Basically, every chord diagram is obviously a diagram like this. The other direction and the fact that this is well defined, and basically there are lots of things to check, but once you have an obvious map, the proofs tend to be easy. So it might take half an hour to prove, it might take 2 days to find a proof and half an hour to present it, but at least in principle, the moment you have a map, it's straightforward. Okay. Are you okay? So I'm done with review. Now I'm coming to the most important point, which is this green square, circle here in green. Okay, so let me take a picture and move on. Okay, and I guess I should also bring it to the top. And there is the annoying delay that I have to resolve, but I haven't resolved yet. I use it to erase the blackboard. So this is AU. This is AU. Oh, you know, maybe I should have, you know what, even before erasing the blackboard, no, I failed to tell you about ZU, okay? So the bad news about ZU is that it doesn't exist. This is the small part of the small print. So ZU doesn't exist. Well, at least doesn't exist the way I set up things right now. Okay, first of all, what do I mean by doesn't exist? So, if it were to exist, and if it would be homomorphic, so respecting the structure, then it would be defined by its value on a single crossing, right? It would map, so what should ZU do? ZU, or the hopeful ZU, should be mapping a single crossing into some sum of core diagrams on the skeleton dictated by the crossing. So maybe if this is AB, it will be some sum of core diagram dictated by A and B, such that ZU, when computed on the two sides of the Rademeister 3 move, gives an equality in AU. Okay? Now, the space AU is graded. So you can just look at small degrees. And in fact, it's enough to look at degree 2. In degree 2, there are only there is a very small number of possibilities for what the image of the crossing could be. You write the most general possibility with undetermined coefficients. You check if you check Rademeister 3, and you find that no assignment of numbers to the coefficients would work. Basically, the equations have no solutions. Okay? Now, in the week before your trip to Berkeley, we spent a little bit of time talking about parenthesized braids. And I think one question that nobody raised and I failed to raise is, why bother talking about parenthesized braids? In other words, why not try to do the same without the parenthetizations? And the answer is, because it fails. Because there is no, and this is a cousin of this issue. So there is simply no expansions for braid, no homomorphic expansion for braids, which respects this infection operations without assuming as stated. However, the moment you introduce parenthetizations, then you have a new object, the change of phi, the change of parenthetizations, and it somewhat restricts what you're allowed to multiply. You can only multiply things if they are have the same parenthetizations at the top and at the bottom. So and it turns out that you do have an expansion, but it's very hard to find, and it involves associators. Okay, so the same thing happens here. So as stated, there is no expansion. However, if you add another adjective and you turn it into parenthesized, what was this thing? Planar. Parenthesized planar metamonoid generated by these things, What does parenthesize mean? It just means that the word here should also be parenthesized. And it also means a restriction on the operations. You can stitch things only if, first of all, they are adjacent, the out of one is adjacent to the in of the next, and furthermore, in the parenthetization, they are innermost. Okay? And then, it's not only to generate these things, you need another object. You need an object that changes the parenthetizations. So I will not go into the details, but the moment you do this, this doesn't exist becomes exists using associators. And associators are extremely difficult to find and to work with. They exist. There are formulas. They are related to multiple zeta numbers and God knows what. But people giving talks in which they pretend that they are friendly objects are telling you lies. Because you can't work with them. I mean, you can't do any actual computation with them beyond small degrees. Okay? Yes, sorry. So I let me take another picture and only then erase. Where am I? Oh, here. So you see, I can't see. You know, the reason I can't see is because I failed to enlarge the font. Now I can see. Good. And here you see. Now I can move to the latest picture. I hope. Okay, good. Okay, so now I can tell you about this box. And I will allow myself to erase this because it's also on the screen. So I think I mentioned to you totally vaguely, what is the relationship between this stuff and Lie algebras? Namely, but totally vaguely, so still totally vaguely, so the vertex is anti-symmetric, so that might remind you of the bracket of a Lie algebra. Furthermore, three ways of contracting the vertex of two copies of the vertex give you an identity. So that might remind you of the Jacobi identity, right? The Jacobi identity is, after all, what is it? It's x bracket y bracket z plus cyclic permutations is equal to zero. So each term here has two applications of the bracket. And here, each term has two applications of the bracket, and you just arrange them in different orders. So this might look like the Jacobi identity. And finally, if you want to think of this of a skeleton line as related to the universal enveloping algebra, then this looks like the bracket interpreted as the universal interpreted in the universal enveloping algebra. So put an x here and a y here, and this looks like the bracket as interpreted in universal enveloping algebra is equal to the product in one order minus the product in the other order, xy minus yx, which is exactly the definition of the universal enveloping algebra. So at least very, very loosely, this appears related to Lie algebras. So now let's make it concrete. Okay? So, claim, if G is, or it's not really claim, it's a claim slash definition. Okay? So if G is a metrized finite dimensional Lie algebra, then there exists a map T U sub G. So T U, because this whole row is called U. So these are usual knot, usual core diagrams, everything here is usual, as opposed to later, which will be virtual. Okay? So there exists a map like this from A U G, sorry, from A U to the union, of a skeleton S to the universal enveloping algebra of this Lie algebra G raised to the S tensor power. So what's missing is that, if G is metrized finite dimension. So what's missing is the definition of metrized. So what does metrized means? So a Lie algebra which is also equipped, so it's a Lie algebra with a metric. And a metric means in a non-degenerate invariant symmetric, I hope I'm not missing anything, bilinear form. Bilinear form. In other words, you should have a bilinear form defined from G tensor G into the ground field, let's say it's Q, though it's not particularly important, such that, now let's expand. So symmetric means XY is YX. Invariant means that, what does invariant mean in general? It means, well, if you're talking about a group, it means that when you act by the group, it doesn't change. But Lie algebra is infinitesimal action, and to say, so it's really differentiations, and to say that it doesn't change means that the derivative is equal to zero. So really what I mean is that if I look at the bracket of X and Y, and I act on this by Z, then I get zero. But what does it mean to act on this situation by Z? By Leibniz's rule, everything is differentiation. And I'm thinking of the bracket as being bilinear, so it's a multiplication of sorts. So it means that Z should act on X plus acting on Y. But how does Z act on X? By taking the bracket. So basically, the condition becomes that if you take the inner product of Z bracket X with Y, and you add to it the inner product of X with Z acting on Y, then this should be zero. Okay? A non-degenerate means that, well, standard thing, but basically that it has an inverse. That if you think of it as a matrix, it's an invertible matrix. And I think I said everything. Okay. Good. So since this was a theory, a claim slash definition, then it should be followed by a proof slash definition. Okay, so here I'm defining the name, and the proof is a definition of the action, of how it works. Okay, so, right. So, first of all, the metric can be thought of as a tensor, which I will call T, in G-dual tensor G-dual. Okay? I mean, that's what a metric is, right? But saying that it degenerates, is that it is non-degenerate, means that there is also a tensor T inverse, which is in G tensor G. Okay? And in fact, if I wanted to tell you what's the definition of T inverse, well, the definition is that if you take T tensor T inverse, you get a tensor in the tensor product of 1, 2, 3, 4 spaces, and then you contract G star with this G, right? Then what remains is a tensor in G star tensor G. But there is a canonical element in G star tensor G, which is the identity, right? G star tensor G is just end of G. So there is a canonical element in it, and it's the identity. And the definition of T inverse is that T contracted with T inverse, the way I described, is the identity. Sorry, I just said matrix multiplication in the most complicated way possible. Okay. Furthermore, there is a tensor bracket, and the bracket is, right, this is just the Lie bracket, okay? So the bracket is a tensor in G-dual tensor G-dual tensor G, right? Because it gets two inputs two inputs in G and output something in G. So these are the inputs, this is the output. And finally, okay, the moment I have T inverse, I can I can contract T with this G. Alternatively, you can think that T induces an isomorphism of G inverse with G, so you can map this G into G dual. So really, this can be modified into a tensor F, which lies in G dual tensor G dual tensor G dual. Okay, all of this is preliminaries. Now I can tell you how the map is defined. So let me do it in the case of this specific core diagram that I'm writing right now. Okay? So here is a core diagram, and I've turned the skeleton 90 degrees, so now the skeleton is horizontal. And why did I do it? I don't know. Because I felt like it. Okay? So basically, cut this diagram into pieces. Or more precisely, first of all, let's copy it. And then around each vertex, cut three times. Okay? And then, it's actually, okay, and you know what? Let's also cut near the, near here. Okay? So the pieces that I have remaining are intervals So on each interval, put a T inverse. So I have three copies of T inverse. T inverse here, T inverse here, T inverse here, T inverse here. And then on each, okay, then and then there are the neighborhoods of the vertices which look like little Y shapes. So on each Y shape, put an F. Now, what do I mean by put an F? I mean that consider it as a tensor in G-dual, tensor, G-dual, tensor, G-dual. Is this visible or am I too small? Travis?
I can see it.
Okay. And on each, so really this F should be thought of as a tensor in G-dual, tensor, G-dual, tensor, G-dual. Likewise, this T inverse should be thought of as a tensor in G, tensor G. So I'll just put a dot instead of, you know, if I try to write a little G, it really, really become too small. So dot means G and star means G dual. Likewise, this T inverse is in G, tensor G. This T inverse is in G, tensor G. And this T inverse is in G, tensor G. Now, this whole assembly can be thought of as an element in, let's see, three copies of G dual, tensor, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 copies of G. So now I have a tensor, so all of this becomes a tensor in G dual cubed tensor G to the eighth. And I think it's a good idea to erase, but before erasing I have to take pictures. And what should I call it? The tensor construction. Okay. I mean, I'm only erasing a tiny bit, but yeah, let me go on for another couple of minutes and then we should decide what to do next. Okay, but you see, there are, so, I mean, these 11 pieces have names, okay? In other words, there is one piece associated with this star, one piece from here associated with this dot, and so on. So what you do is, wherever you have a star next to a dot, you contract. So you evaluate, one G star against one G. So you do it three times. So this becomes an element, so after three evaluations, or no, it's not evaluation, after three evaluations, this becomes a tensor in G to the 5. But again, these five pieces still have names. Namely, the first one on, basically, you know, this G5 is really organized as G, 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 and G, G at the top, right? So what you do is you multiply at the top and multiply at the bottom. And then you get, if you multiply two elements of G, you get an element of U of G. And if you multiply three elements of G, you get another element of U of G. So overall, you came to U of G squared. Okay? Now, okay, I did it on an example, but clearly it generalizes. If I had a more complicated diagram, well, okay, it could have a further strand, it could have a more complicated internal structure. Basically, I would do exactly the same, and so basically, every vertex will become an F, I'll do various contractions. These will kill all the internal parts. I will be left with dots along the strands, and I will multiply them and get an element in some tensor power of the universal enveloping algebra. So this is okay. So I'm done with the definition part of the proof, of the proof definition, and now I have to tell you about the proof part. So the proof part is just to show that this is well defined. So okay, some parts of the well definedness are okay. The vertices are only anti-symmetric; they're not ordered. So this will only make sense if F is anti-symmetric. And that's a property of, so basically it follows from the anti-symmetry of the bracket along with this invariance of the metric. Then you have to show that it descends modulo the relations. So that anti-symmetry, STU and IHX are satisfied. But each of them becomes what I told you it is. So IHX becomes the Jacobi identity, STU becomes the fact that this one is showing behind. Sorry, what's happening? Right, so why is it not, maybe I'm in on the wrong, oh, I'm on the wrong window. Sorry, I should have done here. Okay. So, right. So, STU becomes the defining relation of the universal enveloping algebra, basically because the components are what I said they are. The vertex is a bracket, and a line along the edge is a factor in the multiple, in the universal enveloping algebra. So everything makes sense. Okay? So where are we? So maybe I shouldn't have jumped to the... Okay. So back on this picture, I at least explained why expansions are related to universal enveloping algebras. Okay? Now, but they're not our universal enveloping algebras, and there is a lot of, right, these are, so, and also, sort of, the space is not our space, it's a space of parenthesized things, and no parenthetizations occurred in our story. So this might suggest some relationships, but it's not yet the full thing. Okay? Okay. Should we take a break or continue straight?
Wait.
What?
Sure, 5 minutes.
5 minutes break. Okay.
Break.
Okay, so let's take a break.